Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Montana may be entering maybe a kind of a new era in education. We look at the One Big Beautiful Bill, that there's some significant changes there, some opportunities. And then the Montana legislature also addressed education reform over the past several sessions, some new state laws, choice, more choice here. How are those reforms going to affect you, your family, your community? I'm going to talk about that today with Trish Schreiber and Cheryl Tuskin. They're from the Frontier Institute. Come alongside today as we talk about these education policies, expanding the parental role like that. Funding transparency, that's needed too, and then supporting alternatives to traditional public schools. On the plate today on Voices of Montana. Education today, because it's in everything. It's just something that I think that it's easy for us to overlook, and that would be to our detriment too, because it's vital, and let's not be quiet about it. Let's get on there and get engaged with it. I think we've seen some education changes over the years. I mean, I can pull up statistics here that will show you especially before the implementation of the Department of Education, the budget has increased fivefold, that Department of Education budget, but spending from the federal level, because, you know, look at this is weird. Most of the spending on education comes from the states. So why does the Department of Education need $268 billion? And there's other things you look at here, too. Scores going down as the cost of education goes up per pupil. I have some statistics there, and I think we'll talk about those. They're going to bear out here in this discussion as we look at education choices and opportunity and maybe this fundamental shift, getting more parents involved. I think, I think we were lulled to sleep a little bit, perhaps as parents, but as students, as community members. A lot of places our education system was fine, but we're seeing things, right? An infiltration of things that are outside what we may think is pure education, the reading and the writing and the arithmetic. So we're going to talk about that here today, some changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill, some changes in the past couple of legislative sessions for Montana. Welcoming our guests. First is Trish Schreiber, the Senior Education Fellow for the Frontier Institute. That's a free market think tank based in Montana here. I brag on them an awful lot because I think they're very well balanced. And if you're looking for data and information to inform you on, the Frontier Institute's a place for that. Trish Schreiber is a Senior Education Fellow. Good morning, Trish. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm great. Thank you so much for having us on today.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I appreciate your expertise in it, and I appreciate, you know, our willingness to talk about it as well. Cheryl Tuskin is also with the Frontier Institute, K-12 education-focused education coordinator, actually education outreach coordinator. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having us, Tom.
Thank you for being here. We're kind of getting excited, Trish and Cheryl, about this upcoming education. When does it happen, right? The end of July? I guess you start thinking about it. There's a lot of anticipation and a lot of changes, too. So where to start? What in your mind is important, top of mind, for people to know about the education opportunities that they're afforded now because of some new reform policies?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing for Montanans to understand is that we are in a state of transition into educational freedom and having more school choice. We have some programs that have been approved through the legislature and signed by the governor, but we don't have full access to them necessarily because in the courts, there's some of that going on. We also have a state tax credit scholarship that is available to many, many students, and Cheryl has a lot of information about that one. And then federally, in the One Big Beautiful Bill, part of that was a federal scholarship tax credit for all Americans. So that is really exciting.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that as well, because that's a something that's got parents paying more and more attention. And maybe there's a lot of reasons why parents are paying more and more attention. That's in my mind. Perhaps it's not necessarily true. Cheryl Tuscan, let's launch into some of those things. Now, you guys launched, the Frontier Institute launched EdNavigate. ED Navigate, and it's frontierinstitute.org, and good website, lots of data, and easily you'll be able to find the Ed Navigate section. Cheryl, tell us what this is. But as Trish had talked about as well, what's new that's exciting to you? The tax credit scholarships?
Yeah, you know, to have a federal program is going to be so awesome, where you can actually apply for a tax credit to offset some of your educational expenses. And so Ed Navigate. You can find us at ednavigatemt.com, and we have a parent section that goes over all of the different education options that we have in Montana. We have a guide to traditional public school. So when I had little kids who were approaching kindergarten, I had no idea, how do I even register my kid for kindergarten? So we have a step-by-step guide to traditional public school, a guide to the community choice schools, which is our wonderful charter school program that is unfortunately partly on pause in the courts right now, but it's going to really open up the door to all kinds of opportunity, as well as our tax credit scholarships, where individuals can make a donation into a scholarship fund and get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit from their Montana taxes, which is a fantastic way to fund scholarships and help those kids who are who can't afford to go to private school to have access to another school.
How much is there a limit on that tax credit?
Yeah, it's $200,000 per person.
Wow.
Or corporation. Businesses can donate toward that as well. Oh. Or $400,000 per household if there's a married filing jointly household.
Very significant then.
It is.
Yeah. Are people, and I'll ask you this, Cheryl, and then Trish, you can follow up. When I you know, posited that parents are paying more attention, is that true?
They certainly are. I speak with parents all the time who are looking for other options. And for whatever reason, the current model that they are in isn't working. And it could be from, you know, behavioral issues, from, you know, their child has ADHD and it's just hard for them to sit in a traditional model and they need a more hands-on sort of learning environment, or they need a smaller learning environment, or it's just not convenient, or possibly there's bullying happening.
Yeah.
Parents are looking for a different sort of option. And there's a lot of really exciting educational models. Montessori method has been around for a number of years, but there's a lot of small little boutique micro schools that have been popping up because teachers have these fantastic ideas on how to innovate and create a new way of teaching, from project-based learning to self-directed learning. There's farm-based schools out there where they do their academics in the morning and then they learn about animal husbandry over the afternoon. And parents love that idea, the outside-the-box thinking and the hands-on approach and the real practical skills. And so people are looking for those options. What I come across fairly often, though, are the parents who they want another model, they want to try homeschooling, but they just don't know how to make it happen financially. Either they're a dual-income family and they rely on two incomes to make ends meet, or they want to try one of these micro schools or a private school, and they just can't foot the bill. And so people are looking for those options, seeing if there's any kind of tax credit available or scholarships available. And I help them, you know, walk that path and see if we can't find them a way to really supplement. Because they're paying into their taxes for education, and yet they don't have an opportunity to access it when they leave the public model. And yeah. So we really believe that the funding should follow the students, that we should fund the students and not the systems, and just allow, we call that backpack funding, and allow them to go with those tax dollars wherever they'd like to.
That's Cheryl Tuscan again, Education Outreach Coordinator of the Frontier Institute. Trish Schreiber also with us, Senior Education Fellow. And Trish, I'm going to throw kind of the same question to you. I'll change it up a little bit. You wrote something recently about, you know, those education opportunities, the vouchers, tax credit scholarships, education savings accounts. We'll go into that to follow up what Cheryl's talking about here. But I'm still curious because as I have looked into it, court-wise, right, there is no real solid definition of parental rights in our Constitution, but it has been understood as a very high legitimate right. So it's interesting that it's not well-defined, but yet the courts over the years have defined it as a parental right, so to speak. Is that changing? Do we need to solidify something regarding parental rights? Because, you know, with the new opportunities in education, parents may have to exert their rights a little more aggressively.
Well, that's a really good point, Tom. And I don't know if it's something that we should be defining better. I think this goes back to the Federalist Papers. It's like, do we enumerate our rights? Or do we presume that they're inalienable and they're there?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that we all understand what parental rights are. And I know in the Montana legislature, they have had to address quite explicitly some explanations as to that. Because in some ways, parents' rights, in many ways, are being encroached upon by other institutions. You know, here in Montana, it's pretty good, but we have to be careful because it is a slippery slope. And we have seen in other states that parental rights have become fewer and less and subservient to district rights. And, you know, the children are the parents. They belong to the parents. They do not belong to districts. So, I think that's a big conversation that needs to be had. And sometimes, you know, we are defining that in certain circumstances through the legislature. And in some places, it needs to be better defined. But I also think we need to be really careful because any policy or law that is passed is really only as good as its implementation.
Yeah.
And the implementation happens in a bureaucratic process. By people who are not elected officials, and words can be understood in different ways, and it's something we have to be very careful about.
Yeah, and parents are, right? I mean, Cheryl said, yeah, they're paying a lot more attention. What's your feedback on that?
The parental rights really fast. We did pass two parental rights laws in Montana in 2023. And if you go to ednavigatemt.com and click on the parents page, click on the traditional public school guide, I have a whole section about what your parental rights are, because they were, we did have some trampling of rights happening in the last 5 years. And so we did declare that parents have a fundamental right to direct and make decisions regarding their upbringing and the education of their children. So the two different bills, one focused more on healthcare issues, like parents having the right to direct the what was happening in a hospital setting or with medical doctors. And then the other side was on education. And so parents have the right to withdraw their child from specific instruction or events that they might object to. They have the right to receive information about clubs and extracurricular activities or withdraw their children from those activities. They have the right to access review their child's education and medical and health records. So a lot of this is kind of stemming from teachers and administrators overstepping the boundaries of talking to the children about their gender and guiding them toward being non-binary or transgender and keeping that information from the parents, and they would use a different name in school and then keep that all private. So that was a big deal, and definitely in a lot of people's minds, way overstepping the boundaries between a teacher and a school and what we are sending our children to do versus the rights of parents. And so they can read through the law, and I've got some bullet points in that guide on EdNavigate.
Well, I invite you again. It's going to be August 6th, Highline Harvests, more than just crops, harvest communities. Join us in Havre, as mentioned in that break there, for our For the Farmers tour, okay? Broadcasting live. Voices of Montana will be there at the Northern Ag Research Center. There's a lot of stuff to talk about there with Darren. But then we're going to hit the road and kind of feed some folks who feed us lunch, cold drinks. That'll be a lot of fun. Done that now. I think this is our third year in a row. So For the Farmers tour, and we'll kick it off this year in Havre. Back with Trish Schreiber and Cheryl Tuscan. Trish is the Senior Education Fellow. Cheryl's the Education Outreach Coordinator with the Frontier Institute. Again, that's a Montana-centric think tank as well. Again, appreciate what you guys do. We got a call here, and I think I'll take this one because it brings up an interesting point in my mind, Trish and Cheryl, about, you know, as we're trying to get to education, reading, writing, arithmetic, right? But when you talk about gender dysphoria and all those social things that right now are being forced, in my mind, through our education system, it does stir up some emotion. So I'm going to take this call from Lisa in Miles City. Lisa, you're on the air with Cheryl and Trish here on Voices of Montana.
Hi, I'm calling in to stand up for our Montana teachers. They are not trying to brainwash children. They're doing their best. They're underpaid for what they've got to put up with. And I would like you to stop, keep talking about this hoax. It's a hoax, Tom.
Now, Lisa, okay, thank you for that. I'm going to take it there because that's the point that I think needs to be discussed about. That is coming from the people who are saying, this is not happening. It's not happening. But time after time again, I read reports of it happening, and we've reported on it here, and schools in some states are directed by policy not to inform parents of gender dysphoria issues that their children may be having in public schools. So Cheryl or Trish, whoever wants this one, talk about that, whether it's happening or not. That's the discussion I hear all the time. Well, it's not happening, but yet I read that it is, and there are policies that direct this. Give us the truth.
I'm going to dig into this, Tom. This is Trish. So I'm going to say that it is undoubtedly happening. Is it happening in every school with every teacher? Not even close.
Thank you.
But it doesn't matter. If one person's child is affected by this, that's what matters. And so we need to be very, very careful, like Cheryl was talking about the parent rights. But I also want to touch on what Lisa was saying about, you know, teachers are underpaid, and she's right. Yeah. Our teachers are underpaid, and that, you know, the education freedom movement is also a liberating movement for teachers. What we have found in other states, and even actually right here in Montana, is that so many of these micro schools that are developing and so many charter schools are started by former public education teachers who have all this experience and all these ideas about how they would run a school, about what education they would offer to their students. And so they leave the public system using the policy that has been opened up to free them to be able to offer an education that's for by the government, whether it's through a charter school and or a tax credit scholarship or an education savings account, and allows them to offer something that parents want too. Because the whole point about the brainwashing, as Lisa pointed out, it's not always brainwashing. Sometimes it's just making suggestions, but to young minds that are very supple and still developing. And as you get closer to puberty, you get more confused about things and your brain actually starts restructuring. So they're very vulnerable when they're in school. And so if you have a micro school or a charter school or a private school, your mission is defined. You are loud and proud about what you are doing in your school. And that allows parents to choose an option that's aligned with their own values. And right now, we try to pretend that the public schools don't have a point of view or they don't have a bias. Well, of course they do, because they're run by humans. Like, we cannot avoid our personal biases. It's just that in the public schools, we deny it's happening and therefore it's occluded. Whereas in the private sector or in charter schools, it's just put out there and open about what that mission is. And that's so much of a better system. Mm.
You know, and that expresses the power of education as well. And experts over the year, including some evil leaders over our centuries, have noted the power of education, or more so the power of miseducation. So it's not like, that education in and of itself doesn't have enemies out there or people who want to use it for different purposes outside of educating. Cheryl, I want to have you talk about that. Are teachers feeling this? Are they feeling the pushback? It's not fair in a lot of places because I have teachers in my family, very close to me, as a matter of fact. And I know what they want in that regard. Are they feeling this? And how do they respond?
Yeah, you know, I feel for these teachers because they are sometimes stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, they have their job. They are told by their administrators, you know, they need to administer this test, or there's a, what we have is social emotional learning surveys that are given. And it's, you know, all under the guise of mental health and wanting to identify anyone who might be struggling. But what we're seeing is that, and Abigail Schreier wrote a really great book called Bad Therapy that people can check out, where if you have children focusing on their negative thoughts, it actually creates a kind of a self-perpetuating cycle of negative thoughts, and it's actually can create mental health issues. And so I think sometimes this stuff is done with a good heart to present these social emotional learning surveys. And this is where we've kind of gotten off of, we've gone away from academics into the emotional, spiritual lives of our children through the public schools because they want to help. But they're presenting information, and it can come in a rather suggestive way, like just writing their name, and then it'll say, what is your gender? And it'll say male, female, other, non-binary, trans-identifying. Like, it sets it up so for, you know, a sixth grader who's never been exposed to that sort of thing, like, all of a sudden you're creating questions, and you're putting this option up there. And, you know, a lot of parents think that that's not an appropriate thing.
Trish Schreiber's with us, senior education fellow from the Frontier Institute, and Cheryl Tuskin, EdNavigate, and frontierinstitute.org, and EdNavigate is EdNavigateMT.com, and Cheryl's the education outreach coordinator. Again, thank you guys for being here. Appreciate that. You know, it's a good discussion to have. We all care, greatly about education. And I think, as I said, I've got some stats here. I can throw some out. They're just going to show that, you know, over the years, we have not necessarily been on the right path. The Department of Education was officially created in 1979. Since then, that budget has increased fivefold. It represents 4% of all federal spending. But, you know, most education dollars come from the state and local level. There's scholarships coming from the Fed and programs and things like that, but to the tune of $270 billion. And so, you know, those things are out there. They cause us to go, what's going on here? And as we look at education, there's a lot of thoughts that we can do it better. Education freedom is what Trish Schreiber had talked about. Trish, I love that term because we should all have, you know, we should have labor freedom. You know, we should have freedom in all of our choices, so to speak, not the least of which is education. What did the one big beautiful bill do that you can bring out that we can understand for education?
Great. So it's wonderful that this is going to be available nationwide in 2027. What they included in the bill is a federal scholarship tax credit. So it's hard to judge until the rulemaking process is complete because the devil's in the details. But for right now, what we know is that there are some key features that will expand education freedom throughout the states for students and for parents. So
The way it works is that starting in 2027, taxpayers from all 50 states can make up a maximum of $1,700 donation to a scholarship granting organization that's called an SGO. And that organization is a nonprofit organization that will then grant scholarships to students with the donation that you provide. They will also organize, you will write it on your taxes, your federal taxes, that you'll get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for this donation. So if you donate $1,000, you'll be able to take $1,000 off of your federal obligation. So the SGOs can grant scholarships to students in states which have opted in. This is not an ideal feature. Actually, when Ted Cruz came to the One Big Beautiful Bill, he was hoping that it would open up school choice in blue states where they cannot get these policies passed because of all of the opposition from the education establishment. So governors will have to opt in. But guess what? Our governor is definitely going to opt in, which is a wonderful thing. So, and it's because it's going through the tax code is why the governors have to be the ones who opt in to use it. Now, any American can write it off on their taxes if they want to. They can make the donation and write it off. But the scholarship granting organizations won't be able to operate in just any state. That's the opt-in. The governors will have to decide if that's okay. The scholarship is means tested, so it's not universal. So what that means is that the scholarships will be available to students who are at or below 300% of their county's medium income level. And Drew Catt from EdChoice has made a map about this. You can go to edchoice.com to figure out what your county's median level is. And it requires enrollment in a school. So that means that it's not going to be open to homeschoolers. But what's awesome is that it looks like public school students, meaning district students and charter school students, will be able to access this scholarship for other educational expenses, such as tutoring or educational therapies and so on. So this is wonderful. This is really for all students who meet that means tested in states that opt in. The other awesome feature is that it can be stacked with other choice programs in the state. So if you're receiving, say, you know, $4,500 from Montana's Special Education Savings Account, you could be awarded more money on top of that by the SGO to cover your full tuition if you're enrolled in it, because you have to be enrolled in a school in order to use this one. The scholarship amount will be left up to the scholarship granting organizations. They can decide how much they want to scholarship each student. Unless something goes awry in the rulemaking, they put a limit on that. Hopefully they won't. The other good thing is that it's permanent. So this law is not going to sunset. It can change to become better or worse over time, but it doesn't need to be reauthorized each year, which is wonderful. And so what it comes down to is that the non-universal, the opt-in, and the individual donation of $1,700, those are the undesirable features that were crammed in during the process in D.C., but they're not going to end the game. Actually, and they're limiting, but it's still better than not having access to this.
Yeah.
So it's really an exciting step in the right direction. And Robert Enloe from EdChoice, he put it best. He said that Congress swung for the fences, but they hit a single. So that's where we are. Yeah.
That's Trish Schreiber once again from the Frontier Institute. You can click on there too. She's got a lot of writings there as well as Cheryl Tuskin regarding, you know, options, public schools and in Montana. Cheryl, I'm going to ask you this question too. And Trish, by the way, thank you for that downloading some information there. I know there's more in it. There's some trades and education. There's regulatory relief as well in that One Big Beautiful Bill. But Cheryl, you know, Montana passed some education reform a couple of years ago. I'm not sure we know what happened with it. You got charter schools, you got community choice schools. There is some scholarships, ESAs. Do we really know what our options are in Montana?
You know, that's a really great question.
So that's the whole reason that EdNavigate exists, is to help parents and educators navigate the rapidly changing ecosystem of K-12 education here in our state since we've passed those bills. So 2023, we had a lot of great programs passed by our Montana legislature. The one that Trish just mentioned was the Special Needs Education Savings Account. So if you have a child with disabilities, you can apply for this program and you can get about $6,000 for a child who's in K through eighth grade, or up to about $8,000 for a student who's in high school. And you can use those funds for homeschooling, curriculum, for private school tuition for tutors, as well as all their specialized therapies. So reading help, occupational therapy, speech therapy, those sorts of things. So that's fantastic. However, there is a lawsuit on it, and it is allowed to go ahead and progress. It's in operation right now, but it could go away if there is an unfavorable ruling in the court. So that is a great program that's serving 50 students across the state right now. And then we have scholarships that we talked about before, and then the community choice and the charter schools. So what I've come to understand being here in Montana is that Montanans don't really understand the benefits of school choice. They haven't been exposed to it unless you lived in another state like I did. I lived for 3 years in Colorado, and I had access to amazing charter schools. And so what I'm doing right now is a school choice awareness campaign where we talk about why parents support school choice, why other people should support it, and what it really truly is. And at the bottom line, we believe that parents know what's best for their children. School choice is about trusting parents. And expanding school choice in Montana gives those parents the options for how and where to educate children.
Yeah.
We believe that. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, 100%. I think parents are the source of all education, in my mind anyway. All the best education. Hopefully it's the best education, but we're not perfect. That's all I was just going to go, wow. Yeah, parental choice. I love that for education. We got just a couple, 3-4 minutes here. I'm going to go and ask this question. Cheryl, since you got the stage, well, I'll just follow through with you here. Are we back on track? Our education system, in my mind, had this hard shell around it that we couldn't crack for the longest time, or didn't need to. Maybe we felt our education system was going in the right direction, maybe up until 1979 when they, created the Department of Education, and we lost a lot of local control in that regard, or at least that was the start of that. Are we back on track? And what does the education future have in store for us, Cheryl?
Well, I'm not sure if we can say quite that we're back on track, but we're making some good progress with some of the stuff that is coming out of the Department of Education and kind of the future sunsetting of the department and giving it back to the states to decide. And we know that OPI feels really confident that they can administer all the programs properly and the funding. And Montana, we've been fighting for options for school choice for a number of years,
yeah.
And there's a lot of work still to be done. But we're here for the fight because really at the end of the day, what really matters are the children. Are they thriving? Are we sparking a joy for learning? Or are people feeling stuck? And we just want to see everyone flourishing because we know that healthy competition breeds healthier schools. When families have more options, school innovation, everything improves. And so that's what we're here for. That's what I'm, standing on my soapbox every day talking about, is casting that vision of what could be possible here in our state of Montana. While we see other states around us passing school choice, we are still here in the trenches and striving for that education freedom.
The charter schools, though, have been initiated, right? Aren't there a dozen or so, or what's the number on that, Trish?
Okay, so there are public charter schools which are being run out of the districts, and they're really programs within the schools.
And I can't keep track of the number because some of them have already closed and some of them got charters and they haven't quite opened yet. But if you go to the BPE website, Board of Public Education website, there should be the most recent information about those charter schools there.
All right. I want to ask you to comment on that. Are we back on track? But also, I made a little note as we were talking to ask the question about public schools. Does this focus on education relate and make public schools better? And then do you think we're back on track?
So I think we're not back on track. I feel like we're just at the beginning of the right pathway, as Cheryl pointed out, by the legislature passing these school choice and education freedom bills. That's what's going to put us on track, because what we know from 30 plus years of data in other states who are way ahead of us in on this journey is that choice programs in states that have them improve the overall public school outcomes as well. And that's because that healthy bit of competition really encourages the traditional schools to step up in order to compete with some of the other offerings that students would prefer. So it's a win-win situation. And, you know, I feel like to make this happen here in Montana, what we really need is for civil society to step up and get involved. And that means all of us.
Yeah.
It's like we need to speak openly about what we'd like to see develop in our communities. We need to share ideas, you know, support someone else who's trying to build an emerging model of a school, or, you know, reaching out to your legislators, calling Cheryl, checking out Ed Navigate to, you know, she has a whole page on myth busting there about school choice, because it's just unbelievable the things that people will make up about school choice that are outright lies. And she's also got an FAQ on there to get those answers. What's a voucher? What's a tax credit scholarship? What's a charter school? What's a community choice school? All of those answers have been compiled on Ed Navigate Montana. So I guess basically what I'm saying is, like, to make this happen, for us to really be on the right track, is to not be shy and to reach out to people, and we can change the world.
Yes, I agree, right? Traditional public charter schools, community choice. I'm reading from the Ed Navigate website. Homeschool, micro schools, private scholarships, educational savings accounts. Get informed about it too, right? So ednavigatemt.com. Cheryl, thanks for that website. And Trish as well. Trish Schreiber, Cheryl Tuscan. Thank you guys for what you do at the Frontier Institute. Keep it up, all right?
Thank you so much for sharing.
Yep. We'll be talking with you down the road too, okay? And everybody have a dang good school year. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.